This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor. On call every Saturday afternoon at 5. This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Well, it's August, National Wellness Month. Regular exercise has been shown to have wide-ranging health benefits. There's evidence to suggest that the sedentary lifestyle may be an even stronger predictor of mortality than established risk factors like smoking, high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, diabetes, which then bump risk for heart disease, multiple cancers, and more. In fact, the American Heart Association asks if fitness should be considered a clinical vital sign. Well, today we'll discuss the fact that as we age, we lose muscle mass, which we need for good metabolism, strength, mobility, decreased fall risk. And we're going to want to find out what exercise program is appropriate and how much protein we need in our diet. Joining us is Dr. Nick DeNubley, orthopedic surgeon with Premier Orthopedics, who specializes in sports medicine and knee disorders. He's a best-selling author of Framework series of health and wellness books. He's been on the President's Council for Physical Fitness and Sports. He's advised two U.S. presidents, Bush's 41 and 43, on matters of health policy. He was a team physician for the Sixers. He's the vice president of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. I could use a little of that. The chief medical advisor for the American Council on Exercise. And aside from being an avid tennis player, he's been certified by the U.S. Professional Tennis Association. Booyah. But his most important credential is that he is a fellow St. Joe Hawk. Welcome, Nick.
How are you? Good to be back.
Much better. And, you know, we got so much great feedback on our show with you about pickleball that we played it again.
Nice.
People love that.
Awesome.
Yes.
Pickleball,
so, Nick, let's start
away.
With...
It's.
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy, isn't it? It's good.
Yes.
Pickleball and cataracts, they go together. So, what's the difference between physical activity and exercise? I think that's a good place to start.
That's a great place to start because it's really a continuum when you think about it. And the other end of the continuum or the spectrum that we're really worried about is being sedentary. And what does that mean? It means it's more than half of our population who sleep all night, go to work, and sit at a job all day, come home, sit on the couch all day. No activity whatsoever. And we now know that's as dangerous to your health as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. So when you talk about activity versus exercise, you know, our first goal is to just avoid sedentary behavior, which means activate yourself somewhat. Get up, move around a little, go for a walk, do some yard work, anything but avoiding sitting. And it doesn't have to be all at once. So if you need to break that bad, bad habit, you move from sedentary to some activity. And then, hopefully, you start getting into it and you see the benefits and you reap the benefits and you then want to get into more structured exercise. And we can talk more about that. And then exercise can be, it can still be activity, you know, gardening, going for a walk. This is all exercise. You don't have to go to the gym to exercise. So it's a continuum. And sure, at one end, you have the Olympic athletes and the type of training they do. But to reap the real benefits of activity, you just need to be a little off the sedentary side. You don't have to be the Olympic athlete. You just need to avoid sedentary behavior.
Yeah, and with aging, we have several things we have to counteract. We talked about our muscles begin to atrophy, our skeletal arms and leg muscles. Our bone density starts to diminish. We can talk about that, especially with menopause. In terms of our hearts, heart is also made of muscle, and those muscle fibers start to go on vacation. That's what makes our hearts a little bit weaker. Pulmonary, our chests don't expand as well, so our oxygen consumption drops a bit. Our mobility, gee whiz, you're an orthopedic surgeon. Our gait's affected not just by strength and muscles, but joint health, vision, balance. All those things help us to continue to be agile. So what are the benefits of regular exercise? Because there's aerobic and resistance, two important distinctions, yeah.
Well, the you know, Thomas Curtin was an exercise physiologist, and he had a great quote. It's the human body's the only machine that breaks down when not used. And it's true. If you know, you don't, you hear about you, if you don't use it, you lose it. But we do, and with age, the losses are dramatic. I mean, after the age of 30 or 40, and even in your after your 20s, women have peak bone health in their 20s. They're 20. So you build it in your teens, which our teenagers aren't doing these days because they're not getting enough calcium, they're not exercising enough. So you build it, and then it's all losses after that. But you can stop those losses or minimize losses, whether it's to how your heart performs, your muscles, your bones, even your tendons weaken, your muscles weaken, so you're more prone to injuries. And exercise counteracts all of this. And at any age, you can improve your strength, for example. You can improve your strength even at 90 years old. They've done studies on nursing home patients where they put them on simple weight training programs and resistance program, and not only did they improve their strength, now you're not going to improve it like a teenager when you have all those hormones raging, and but you're still going to improve it, and more importantly, you're going to stop the losses. But those people not only showed improvement in their strength, when they weren't measuring anything on that group, they found them more active, more interactive with each other. It improved their lifestyle as well as the things that you measure. So there's different types of exercise. There's aerobic exercise, which is about building the most important muscle in your body is your heart. So you can build your heart with aerobic. It's walking, it's jogging, it's, you know, Stairmaster or elliptical machine, jumping rope. Anything that raises your heart rate a little and makes your heart work will improve your heart function. And then there's strength training exercises, muscle building exercise, which is usually with weights, but it can be with tubing or machines at the gym. There's many, many ways, and it doesn't have to be expensive. You can do it at home with some simple equipment. Simple things like push-ups, pull-ups also are ways to build strength. So you can work your muscles. And then the other side of exercise, you know, I say there's four pillars. It's your heart, cardiovascular, muscle strength, strength training, flexibility and mobility, which is, there's a difference between the two, being more mobile and being flexible, but we lose that with age too, some people more than others. So stretching becomes very important. And core, we talk about your core, which is your center of mass, you know, your abdominal strength, your spinal strength. The core strength is very important too. And when I look at what people should be doing on a weekly basis, it's rare for anyone to do all of it the way they should. Usually you love one thing and you do it. The runners love to run. They're often very tight. They don't stretch. Then there's the yoga people who are stretching all the time, but maybe need to build strength or cardiovascular. But it's almost like when you talk about your vitamins, we all talk about a minimum daily requirement of vitamins, daily requirement. I look at exercise as a minimal weekly requirement. And you really should be doing equal parts of all of those things. Spend time on cardiovascular, spend time on strength, spend time on mobility and stretching. And you really need to balance your exercise routines and have all of that. And most of us do not do that. I'm a tennis player, so I get a lot of my cardio playing tennis. I don't have to, but the days that I don't play tennis, I'll go to the gym and get on the Stairmaster. I've had to modify my exercise. We can talk about that because my knees aren't great and I've got some other issues. So there's almost no excuse for not doing it. There are ways to safely activate yourself, even if you have medical or orthopedic issues, but sometimes it can be, you have to be a little creative.
So aerobic is just like it sounds. It's improving oxygen, aerobic. So that helps with heart health and maybe decreases your blood pressure a little bit, improves your sugar and cholesterol control. Resistance is the new hot thing that we're emphasizing. The New York Times article. What's really cool, if you really stop and read about muscles, just at rest, the more muscle mass you have, the more calories you burn. How much fun is that? You can burn calories while you're watching TV if you've done your workout because, we can talk about the path of the physiology of it, but resistance training or lifting your grandchildren or the bag of dirty diapers, whatever that is, it increases the fat-free body mass because you're losing muscle mass and you don't want your weight to be more fat than muscle. And every year, am I right? Every year, a pound of muscle turns into a pound of fat, which then slows metabolism and beats up your muscles even more, and it just snowballs, yes?
Right. The muscle doesn't turn into fat. They're two different tissues,
no.
but they are related
replaced
directly because
yeah.
You're losing your muscle, especially if you go on a diet. The body's very cruel. It tends to cannibalize your muscle first, and we can
yes.
talk more about that. And it's hard to get rid of the body fat, but strength training actually preserves your muscle, increases your metabolic rate, even if you're just sitting around. So you have a higher metabolic rate and you wind up losing weight more. So it's essential for anybody losing weight to be on a strength training program because the natural thing is to lose muscle. And on the scale, you look better, but you're really losing that dynamic metabolic tissue, muscle, and the fat's still hanging in there. And you really haven't improved your health, especially the visceral fat inside that you don't see that is connected to metabolic disorders and diabetes and things like that. So strength training should be part of every weight loss program for sure,
yeah.
And it helps prevent weight gain.
And the more fat that you have even in your core increases your insulin resistance, and when that's thrown off, that adds to muscle breakdown, according to this article I read. But so they're all connected. You can't just have some parts of your health that are in good shape. You want to address everything. And we want to counteract the word people are talking about is sarcopenia. Obviously, penia means less or smaller amounts of, and sarco, I guess, is a Latin root for muscle, so sarcopenia is the big word for that. And bone density. I am the queen of potato chips. I am made of potato chips. I broke 10 bones after age 40, she said proudly. We'll talk about that another time, but I just sachet a lot. Let's take a break, and when we come back, more with exercise in the elderly.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. Our guest today is Dr. Nicholas DeNubly, orthopedic surgeon with Premier Orthopedics and a health and fitness master with books that he's written. Your website, Nick, is drnick.com. Fantastic resource. So much good information about strength training and all the topics we're discussing today. Nick, I want to spend a little time on how women should strength train or resistance training, because our little bodies, all men and women, we lose muscle mass, but women, you lose your estrogen, and men and women have some of each hormone, estrogen, testosterone. Testosterone's anabolic. It builds muscle. So when that starts to dip after menopause, we just shrivel up, yes?
That's correct. And women are much more prone, unfortunately, to bone loss at early ages than men are. And that's why fractures become such a big problem. And falls and fractures go together, especially with age. And it's directly tied to your strength, the amount of muscle you have on your body. When you are doing exercises to build muscle, you are also building your bones. And it should be a lifetime of this. Again, it's never too late. But unlike muscle, which you can build at any age, bone, you can prevent further losses, but you can't exercise it back to where it was. So it's so important for people who have young kids, especially young females, to make sure they're doing everything to build their bones when they're younger, because it's like a savings account. If you have a good savings account and you hit financial difficulties, you can withstand the losses. But if you're low to begin with, if your tank is low, you're going to get in trouble at a younger age, not even menopause. And we see a lot of women breaking bones. So strength training gives you bone, not only bone health, it builds the muscles and protects you from falls, and it does improve your, depending on how you're doing your weight training, it can improve your balance, and balance is a whole other thing that you need to work on, especially the second half of your life and as you age, so that you're not falling. And you can improve your balance too by doing some simple, like the yoga tree pose, just working on that. At first you can do it just where you even lean on something for balance, and then look in a mirror and do it, because you have the visual feedback so you don't fall. When you get really good, you do it without a mirror. Then you can do it with your eyes closed. And that actually retrains your body's GPS systems. We have these. Every joint has these little internal GPS systems that keep you centered and keep you upright. And you lose that with an injury or with age. So you can constantly improve that and lower the risk of falling. So you're less vulnerable if you build strength, if you have stronger. And in fact, the strength is an independent biomarker of longevity. Grip strength and quadriceps, which is your front of your thigh muscle, your main, where people have trouble going up stairs, getting out of a chair as you age, that is your quad muscle. But both the quad and grip strength, people who have low quad or grip strength, it's an independent biomarker for longevity, that you're not going to live as long. So there's so many reasons to incorporate strength training, and you got to do it right. You can't like the teenager go out and just lift heavy weights, and you know your frame's a little more vulnerable. You're more vulnerable, so you got to be smart how you train.
Well, that brings up the idea of, so if somebody's postmenopause, say 50 and over, roughly, as you say though, you reach your peak at a much younger age. You have to consider if there's already osteoporosis there, we want to go with low impact exercise, right? We don't want to be pounding on the ground. How about like swimming? The elliptical is probably safer than, you're still building muscle, but you're not pounding your feet with running. Pilates, and you mentioned yoga, but not hot yoga. Yes, is that an important distinction?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for, but you know you have to be, exercise is very, they talk about specificity, it's very specific. Depending on what you're doing, there's so many exercises that are good for you, like swimming is great for your heart and lungs, it's good for people with back problems, it's low impact if you have arthritis in your knees, but it does not build bones.
Oh, true.
You're almost like an astronaut, you're weightless in water. So astronauts, you get these healthy, young, strong astronauts go up in space, and they lose tremendous amounts of bone. Even distance cyclists distance cyclists can lose bone because they're building their quads. Cyclists have quads like tree trunks, but it's not a stimulus for bones. So you have to be very specific with what you're doing. And yes, walking is great, but the bones that you're working are the ones you'll strengthen. So if you're out walking every day, it's low impact, it's safe, it builds the legs and the lower, the pelvis and the lower spine area, but it's not going to do anything for your prevent wrist fractures or shoulder fractures, so you have to work those areas as well. So it's, you just have to be very smart about designing your exercise program, and some people need help, whether you go to a physical therapist or a certified trainer, there's personal mm-hmm. trainers that are very knowledgeable in this, that can get you on the right program, but you got to, even with them, you have to be careful, because they kind of want to earn their keep and they want to push you real hard so you're sore the next day. And a lot of people drop out if you push yourself too hard and you flare up that rotator cuff or the arthritic knee that you didn't even know you had till they start working you hard, then you never go back to it. And you don't want that. So you just have to start slow, gradual, build up. And, you know, I think it's important to do it right. It's so important. You got to do it, but it's not just do it. Like Nike says, it's do it right.
Yeah. And so we're not going for the no pain, no gain philosophy here because we don't want you to injure yourself.
Correct.
So, and this is maybe too broad of a question. How many times a week? How much time per day? What you're saying is a little something every day, because the other thing is you might build muscle, but once you stop, you don't store it. You don't store your keep.
It goes away quick.
Pain
it's
in the
sad,
neck.
But it leaves. As soon as you stop exercising, within a few weeks, a lot of those gains start to go away. But, you know, you want to start with doing something every day, whether it's a short. And you know what? It can be cumulative. Like if you say, well, we'd love you to walk 30 minutes a day. Well, I can't walk 30 minutes a day. Well, you know, if you walk 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the afternoon, 5 minutes in the evening, and you can tolerate that, then go for 7 minutes, seven, and it adds up. And then eventually maybe you can string it all together when you improve your ability.
Well, I like the word gradual there, because I remember being in my kitchen a couple years ago, and my sons, two sons who work out regularly, said, Mom, you never work out. And I said, watch this. And I stood there and I did 104 squats. Do not ask me why. I was showing off. And then for the next maybe 3 or 4 months, the tuxedo stripe on the outside of my leg, whatever that tendon is, was on fire. Silly me. Nick, what about shoes? Shoes are so important.
Shoe wear is really important, if you're, especially if you're going to start a walking program. Believe it or not, there are walking shoes, but I prefer a good running sneaker for people who like to walk. It's a little better cushioned. There are some really great running stores around that if you go to a specialty running shop, they'll make sure the fit is right. Everybody's foot is a little different. Some people have a wide forefoot and a narrow heel, and it's got to fit right. And women are notorious for buying the wrong size shoes if they like the look of it. There was a study done. One of my colleagues in New York City stopped women on the street, really high fashion area, and I think she found that 75% of them were in the wrong size shoes, but they admitted they just liked it, and maybe they didn't have their size, or they didn't, you know. So you get fitted properly. It'll last you forever. You know, runners go through shoes quicker, for sure. And there's nothing wrong with running. If you have good knees and your body can handle it, you know, you could even do a little walk run, interval training, it's called, where you walk a few minutes and then maybe trot or jog 1 minute and then walk
again. I like
that. That actually boosts the exercise routine, and you don't need as much of it to get the same impact. It's called intervals. You could do that on a bike. You could do that on an elliptical machine, where you go slow for 3 minutes and then boost it for 30 seconds. And you got to be in good shape to do some of this stuff, and you don't want to do that the first time. And you always want to check with your doctor, especially if you have medical issues. I know we're going to talk about that, that you don't want to just jump in, especially if you're under treatment for a variety of medical issues. But most people can start increasing their activities, you know, safely, especially if you're just getting up and avoiding sedentary behavior and doing more.
If people don't hear anything else today, just that one little tip to go slowly, then do intervals. That's a great addition to anybody's workout. So, Nick, we talked about this a little bit earlier. There is no benefit to high-intensity exercise like running over low-intensity walking in terms of building muscle. So women, though, who are concerned with becoming muscle-bound or too bulky, what do you say about that?
Most women cannot build that kind of muscle.
They don't
they don't have the natural testosterone. When you look at women bodybuilders, they've probably picked that because they maybe have higher normal testosterone. They see the results and they like the way they look. Or a lot of at the professional level, they're taking the things that are illegal, anabolic steroids, growth hormone, and you can grow like that. But the average woman, even an adult male, it's hard to build that kind of mass. And you know what? What I say to women, some people who have a little more natural testosterone and they start thinking they're looking too bulky, just back off.
Yeah.
You don't have to push it hard.
Yes.
You could go with lighter weights, higher repetitions, not going for heavier weights. And, you know, if you don't like the look. But most women do not have to worry about becoming muscle bound. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
So it's interesting, too. We alluded to this a little bit earlier. The more muscle mass you have, the more calories you burn, even at rest.
At rest.
So it's a great tool, aside from burning calories as you work out, as you exercise, that muscle really helps with weight control. So let's talk a little bit about protein intake. We have my favorite registered dietitian coming on to talk about more detail about protein. But in general, especially as we age, do most people over 50 get enough protein?
Absolutely not. And when you age, you don't absorb, your GI tract does not absorb, and you know this, this is your world.
Yeah.
You don't absorb protein as efficiently. So you maybe need even a little more than what was standard policy for what you should be getting. And it doesn't have to, it doesn't mean you have to eat steaks every night. You know, there's plant-based protein, there's protein supplements, there's some great, you know, which is the name? Core makes these drinks you can get in any store. They come vanilla, chocolate. They're low fat, 26 grams of protein. Fairlife makes that one. There's others around that are just a simple boost to make sure you're getting enough protein, or a supplement. You can get a protein powder, a nice whey, W-H-E-Y, protein powder, and add some to a smoothie. Very, you know, a fruit smoothie with a protein supplement. But most of us are not getting enough protein, especially as we age. So it's really important because you need that to keep your muscle and to build your muscle.
Yeah. Your muscle mass, we said it helps burn calories. It also makes us feel fuller. So it makes you feel full more quickly, and you're going to eat less in the way of carbs and fat. Plus, without enough protein, you can't develop that. If you lose weight precipitously, especially if people are taking the weight loss drugs, you can become skinny fat. More fat, less muscle mass. Not good.
And then your metabolic rate drop. This is the yo-yo dieting they talk about. You go on a diet, extreme diet, your scale weight drops, but you've lost muscle. And then you start going back to the way you were, but you have less. Now your metabolic rate, your calorie burning ability is lower, and you start go back and eat maybe what you were eating before, and all of a sudden you gain more weight. Well, how could that be? Well, because you've lost the furnace.
Yes.
The furnace is the muscle. It's an organ. Think of it as an organ, like your liver or your kidneys. Your muscle all adds up to be an amazing organ that we're learning more and more about. They even think that strength training can reprogram the DNA that is responsible for longevity. Some of those genes that are longevity specific get remodulated with strength training and building muscle. So the body, it almost says, oh, wait, you're doing stuff like when you were younger. So we got to make you younger again or something. It's really the fountain of youth. I mean, exercise is the closest thing to the fountain of youth.
Well said.
That we've ever found.
Yeah. Quick thing, and we're going to bring this in the next segment. If you have kidney disease, don't start taking more protein till you check with your doctor. Too much protein can hurt kidneys that are already slowing down. Check with your doctor first. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, more on exercise in the elderly. And now for your real champion. I call this segment, The Young Man and the Sea. On Friday night, July 19th, Ocean City attorney Brandon Walcott and his wife arrived at the beach to sip on a beer and enjoy the sunset. It was about 6 p.m. Growing up as a swimmer and surfer at the shore, his experienced eye noticed there was a significant riptide that evening. The tide was high, there were no waves, but he could see that typical movement under the surface, percolating in a line that went straight out, perpendicular to the beach. Movement that could pull you out quickly. Well, there was a family of four playing near the riptide, and Brandon knew they might be pulled into danger. Within minutes, the current carried the mom and her three children about 40 yards out from the shore. Brandon jumped into action and brought the six-year-old boy back to the beach, asking his wife to call 911. When he went back for the other three, he could only see two, who pointed to the general direction, quote, where they had last seen the third swimmer. Brandon dove under the murky water and felt his way around, finally locating the teenage girl. He lifted her to the surface, and she was lethargic. She coughed up seawater and became more alert. But fear caused her to panic, and she couldn't swim. She was fighting him, so he gripped the girl by her shirt to get her to safety. In his best lawyer/dad voice, he insisted that the mom and remaining 10-year-old son should stop swimming and just tread water. Once the mom and her son stopped moving, the current actually brought them closer to the shore where it was easier to help them out of the water. So for our listeners, I heard this story and wanted to make this a teaching moment. First, remember it's always risky to swim in the ocean or a pool where there's no lifeguard. It was 6 p.m., the sun would be fading soon too. Second, Riptides, leading cause of drownings on the beach and the most common cause for rescues. Regular currents run parallel with the tide coming in and out, but a riptide goes straight out, perpendicular to the beach. An experienced lifeguard can spot a riptide and evaluate its strength, but most people can't recognize a rip current, and Mother Nature doesn't seem to care. So if you're caught in a riptide, remain calm. Wave your arms for help if a lifeguard is on duty. If not, look for others on the beach so they can call 911. Do not swim against the current. Like the girl in this case, you might fatigue and go under. Instead, if your feet can't touch the ground to walk in, swim parallel to the beach out of the rip current, then you can swim to the shore. And if you can't swim parallel to the shore, float or tread water, because often you'll just float to the shore. Brandon Walcott is a real champion. Yes, he's an experienced ocean swimmer, but he's never seen a rescue, let alone participate in one. In fact, he's never had a life-saving course. As a truly good person, he saw others in danger and went into go mode without hesitating, risking his own life, especially when he had to subdue the strong teenage girl in a panic. Brandon's mother was a lifeguard who was vigilant about teaching her children water safety. Little did she know how valuable her lessons would be. We salute you, Brandon Walcott, and your mom. You're real champions.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
And welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We are with Dr. Nick DeNubley, who has taught us so much about the value of exercise, how a program should be unique to each person, and the really important factors about protein, how much is appropriate. You know, Nick, I've talked to Emily Rubin. She'll be joining us in the next segment. And she said roughly take your body weight, cut it in half, and that's about the amount of protein. So the, you know, in med school, we used the average 150-pound man, so 75 grams of protein a day. A chicken breast is about 25 grams. My question for you is, if you're going to eat protein, should you eat it within a certain amount of time close to the exercise, before or after, like within 2 hours or so? Is there a rule?
I think the more important thing is just to make sure you're getting enough over the day, over the course of a day. Now, there is sometimes you'll see data on or off regarding do you have a window after strength training where recovery, it helps recovery. If you get your protein, a lean protein, within some people say 30, some people say 60 minutes of an intense exercise program, it will help you. And yeah, you could do that, but there's no harm if you don't do that. But yeah, that's where that comes from, that you have that window of recovery, and protein may help that recovery. Some good data that it probably does. And for the high level athletes, I think they're much more in tune
and so on.
But I think the first thing you want to do is just make sure you're getting enough. And I think that amount is about right. Some people even say it could be even up to 1 gram per pound. That's a lot. Some people say 0.6 grams per pound. But I like your thing. If you cut your weight in half, you got to get at least that amount. Maybe a little more if you're strength training.
Maybe 10% more. Yeah.
A little more is not going to hurt. And you want high quality protein. Lean beef if you're going to have it. Lean meats like turkey, plant-based proteins, protein supplements, Greek yogurt. There's a lot of ways to get
that. That's a good one, too.
Yeah. Without cooking steaks.
But please talk to your doctor. Get labs to make sure that your kidney function is good. We don't want to add damage to already kidneys that might be affected by your medications or other conditions you have. So with that, Who should have a medical assessment before they begin a new exercise program?
You know, if you have medical issues and you're under treatment, or you get out of breath easily, or you have had some issues with dizziness, or if you have significant orthopedic ailments, that's the stuff you want to get checked out, whether it's through your primary care physician or your specialist or your orthopedic specialist if it's musculoskeletal. But, you know, there's a thing people can look up called the PAR-Q. It's P-A-R-Q. And if you just Google that, it's seven questions. And if you answer okay to those questions, it's really about, do you have any shortness of breath, any chest pain, dizziness? It's simple questions. If you answer okay to all those, you're probably safe to start simple exercise. I'm not talking high intensity, push yourself to the max, but it's safe to get off the couch and start being more active. And then there's the PAR-Q Plus. If you answer yes to any of those questions, PAR-Q Plus is another 10 questions that goes into more detail and gives you a yes or no as to whether, yeah, you better go get checked, you know. So I think most people have a green light to start exercising. Some people might have a little bit of a flashing yellow light. And then there's the red light, you know. If you're getting chest pain or you get dizzy, or you got to be very careful there because you don't want to hurt yourself or get into trouble.
Yeah, and it's almost two categories. People with known heart or lung disease, kidney disease, they don't want to get dehydrated. Or if they don't have anything on their medical, you know, metric list, like heart disease or history of heart attack or anything, but they haven't been to the doctor for a while and they're symptomatic. If you notice with exertion, your climb steps, your low pressure, which could be equivalent to chest pain, or short of breath. And as you say, if you have an orthopedic previous knee surgery, you're a knee surgeon, you want to make sure that you're not beating those new replacements up. Or if you don't have total knee replacement, if you have bow legs.
And you mentioned it. You mentioned you have to, you know, especially in the summer months, the exercising in really extreme heat, which some parts of the country will have that 90 degrees and 80% humidity. Not only do you have issues with the heat if you're getting older, but hydration is so important. If you're out exercising and you're sweating, you got to stay ahead of that. You drink before you go, during the exercise. If you're out for more than an hour in anything, like I'll play 2-3 hours of tennis. If I'm out more than an hour and I'm sweating, you need some electrolytes too. You really need to just not just drink water. You need to get, you know, there's easy ways you can add a little something into your water bottle where you get some electrolytes safely. So you got to watch all that stuff. But, you know, that's at the next level when you're pushing a little harder and you're out all day in the heat doing it. But again, our message today is if you're sitting around, you're harming your health. You're less likely to live longer. You're going to get sick. And a lot of people say, well, I don't have the time to exercise. And
make it.
My buddy Schwarzenegger used to say, every minute you spend exercising is an hour less you're going to sit in a doctor's office. It's like,
yes.
It's so great. So true.
So you had a long-term friendship with Arnold.
Yep.
Schwarzenegger.
Great friend.
And what did you learn from him, Nick? I'm sure he learned a lot from you.
It's mutual, but I think I learned a lot more from him just about success and adversity. And I mean, there's a guy who came to this country with nothing. I mean, he has a book called Be Useful, which I recommend to everyone, especially kids. It's because his dad always used to say to him, Arnold, be useful, because he thought he was like going nowhere, because he had all these crazy dreams. I want to go to America. I want to be a bodybuilder. I want to be a movie star. And they wanted him to see a psychiatrist when he was young. But every step of the way, people told him, no, you can't do that. You can't be in the movies. You can't be a politician. And he just found a way to have a vision and have a plan and reach his goals. And the book is so motivational. So that's a lot of what I've learned from him, that you can really influence people. You can do a lot. The same amount of work you do to help one patient, it doesn't take much more work to help a lot of people. It inspired me to write books. It inspired me to, you know, go on national type of visibility. And so, yeah, you learn a lot from him. I mean, he's a very interesting guy, and he's a sweetheart. He's such a good friend.
It's what I've taught my own children. Ask if somebody says no, you've lost nothing. Weekly amount of exercise. There's no general recommendation, or is there?
Yeah,
ballpark.
There is. You want, you know, you'd like to have, you know, 30 minutes of moderate exercise. Moderate means you're a little out of breath, but you can carry on a conversation. You're not sucking wind. You're not like bent over, but But you can't just be sitting there talking away and comfortable. You want to be a little out of breath, but be able to have a conversation. 30 minutes of moderate exercise most days of the week. So you could take a day off here and there, and it should be mixed. It, you know, if you can do aerobic cardiovascular 3 days a week, and strength training 2 days a week, and stretch when you're sitting around the house most days of the week, you know, you're going to be okay. And it's a habit. And
yes.
Once you get into it, you'll find that you want to do more. But developing a new habit is not easy. And, you know, especially if you're a little sore or something flares up, you got to find a way to keep going.
So really, Nick, what you're saying is altogether, aside from pointing out the physical benefits, it improves your sense of well-being, your mood, you know, quality of life. I don't want to sound trite, but it just does. Plus, it lowers the risk for dementia. If we're controlling your sugars and your dementia, I don't know, I think I'm doomed for that, but I really am, I don't want to get that. But the other thing, especially after COVID and all the talk about isolation not being good, if you even walk with a buddy, you're more committed to show up. If your friend says, I'll meet you outside at 8:30 tomorrow morning, you're going to do it, and it increases social activity, especially we're talking about older people. If somebody wanted to see you in the office, Nick, what number would they call?
Well, they can find my drnick.com, drnick.com is the best way to, it has my office phone number, which is 610-789-0150. But, yeah, happy to help. My books have a lot of information. My framework,
yes.
My framework series of books, especially the first one, which Arnold was kind enough to write my foreword for, I'm very proud of. But your 7-step program for healthy muscles, bones, and joints, and I, the plan that I put together there, really, I say if you're doing the right thing for your muscles, bones, and joints, you're also helping your heart and you're doing other things. So it's a really very comprehensive, holistic kind of program. And I did something in that book that I think people will find helpful, especially adults. At the end of the book is the troubleshooting. Like a computer books always used to have the troubleshooting thing when things are go wrong. So I take the top 20 orthopedic ailments, and I each one I say, here's what you how you should change your exercise routine for that, to not only avoid problems, but maybe even help the problem that you have. So I took the top 20 ailments and give workarounds for people. And that's very helpful for us. What adult doesn't have something that hurts?
And it's all about being practical. We can talk theory and how, you know, sodium enters a cell and how potassium leaves, but what am I going to do about my sore knee? And what can I do to control my weight? And what can I do to build strength? This is fantastic. Frameworks is the book, the name of your series of books. It's all on drnick.com. That's drnick.com. And Nick, it's such a treat to have you on the show. We've known each other for a long time, and I learn something great every time I talk to you. So thanks for joining us.
It's always fun. I really appreciate it. I hope your listeners like it. I think they will.
I know they do. Thanks, Nick.
You're welcome.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about maintaining protein and how aging makes it harder to lose weight. And Emily Rubin, my favorite, one of my favorite guests, is back to talk to us about how much protein you should have in your diet. Emily Rubin is a registered dietitian, a licensed dietitian nutritionist with a master's degree in public health. She's the director of clinical dietetics for Celiac Center, the Fatty Liver Center, and Weight Management Center at the Thomas Jefferson University Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology, and she's the director of PR for the Philadelphia Academy of Dietetics and Nutrition. Welcome, Emily. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
So, Emily, as we age, it's easier to hold on to extra weight. even though our eating habits may not have changed. Why does that happen?
Exactly.
Is it metabolism?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, actually, that's a perfect answer. It's the metabolism. As we age in general, our metabolism slows, you know, starting after 30, 40, 50. And the reason why is because our muscles actually shrink as we age, and therefore we don't burn as many calories, and those calories then could turn to fat. So it makes it a lot harder for us to exercise that off. So eating the same way that you ate in your 20s and all of a sudden gaining weight or can't lose weight, that's pretty much the reason why, because our bodies aren't, the more muscle you have on your body, the more calories you're going to be burning at a resting state. So if you lose muscle, therefore you're going to have a slower metabolism.
So I think that's really important for people to hear. Our muscles start to atrophy, the fibers just start to disintegrate, so we have less muscle mass. So you just said something very important. In a resting state, muscle helps us to burn fat,
so
than if we didn't.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're always burning calories, like you and me sitting here.
Burning calories.
The person that's right. Our bodies are obviously always burning calories. It's just how quickly it is. So somebody who has more muscle means they're going to burn calories when they're sitting, watching television, when we're sitting doing this interview show, you know, when you're out and about, you know, you're constantly going to be burning calories. If your muscles shrink and you have less muscle, you're then going to burn less calories. And that's a normal biological function of age. But again, we can offset that by adding resistance training and adding exercise.
Right. So the other thing is muscle, just sitting there, muscles help you burn calories. But secondly, if you don't have enough muscle mass, you need the muscle mass to stay strong and be active. So muscles play more than one role in this. So if your muscles shrink, the calories that you do continue to eat then are more likely to turn to fat. So that's the third layer of this.
Right. They're going to be stored, you know, in your liver. And if it's not, you know, as glycogen, as energy, it's stored. That's where our liver stores all of that. And when it's stored, that's when it can turn into, you know, weight gain.
And then we're talking about women today and what kind of exercise is helpful for women 50 and over, or menopause time. How does menopause make it even harder to maintain our weight and make it easier to gain weight?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I have like couples come to me, I have a male and female husband, wife, couple, partners, you know, you always see they both go on diets and the male will lose weight quicker than the female. And the reason why is because males don't have, you know, have different, you know, estrogen and different hormones. But what happens is females have a lower, we start to lose estrogen, which therefore then in some people can increase their hunger, and that will reduce lean muscle mass. So it makes the weight management or weight loss, you know, much more challenging.
So if it increases your hunger, you're going to gain weight, but how does it mess with your muscle mass?
Well, I guess lower estrogen levels could can reduce, just with the combination of age and having lower estrogen level can also decrease. You have lower estrogen and testosterone, all those, and progesterone, all those hormones decrease. That's why, which I'm sure you've had.
I think that's
right.
The case.
It's all three of those different hormones decrease, and therefore our lean muscle mass decreases. And that starts.
Men and women are a combination of estrogen, testosterone. So as we drop in estrogen, we also drop in our testosterone. Maybe that's part of the muscle issue as well.
Right. It's all
combination. Say it so well.
And then I was saying too, this sadly in women it starts at about age 35. So even like the perimenopausal state is when this starts. And what I've learned is, you know, each year post or perimenopausal, over 35, over 40, 1 pound of muscle turns into a pound of fat, metabolism wise, because our bodies again just aren't burning as efficiently, and these numbers are decreasing, and sometimes our hunger, eating habits, you know, maybe we're something. There's always that thin person, and I always tell people, you know, I could eat whatever I wanted. I was 90 pounds. That's what I had. I was 90 pounds when I was, you know, 25, and now I'm 150. I'm like, well, that's the reason why you can't eat the same way, you know, as you did when you were 25. Not every person, you know, I always say thin people, naturally thin people, are never naturally thin. They the weight always catches up with you if you're not exercising.
Well, and look at the way our culture has changed. So many of us are sitting longer than we had ever spent time sitting before, because we're attached to computers and techno, and that doesn't help, being sedentary.
I was going to say the difference with activity of daily living, like now that a lot of people can work hybrid or working from home, you're losing, you know, parking your car, walking to and from the train. These are all activity of daily living that people are losing. The normal walking or their normal exercise that's already incorporated into their diet is gone. So that contributes to it. Sometimes when you're home, contributes to weight gain. Sometimes when you're home, you may go grab, you know, you're snacking. You just have more access to all these foods that may not be as healthy.
Oh, that quick walk to the refrigerator doesn't count as exercise.
No.
but I know myself, when I'm at Jefferson seeing patients, easy capeasy, 11, 12,000 steps a day because my office is on one floor. I go up and down the steps easily 15 times a day to a different office or endoscopy suite. I'll run to other buildings for meetings, and so easy. But whereas if I'm an office in the burbs, I walk in, I'm at that desk all day, and I lose my steps. So you make a good point about the working hybrid and losing steps. So sarcopenia is the word. Pena means less, and sarco is, I guess, the Latin root for muscle. Sarcopenia is what people will hear or read about. We lose that muscle mass. How can we maintain or increase muscle?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways. A, you know, exercising, which, you know, doing the resistance training and cardiovascular, you know, just about daily. And in conjunction to that, you want to increase protein. So we want to add protein from, you know, various sources. If you're vegetarian or vegan, you could do the plant-based sources, beans, nuts, tofu, or lean. And you want to do lean sources, chicken, turkey, fish, all ways to eat protein. And I had just learned it also, is you just don't want to eat protein once a day. It's actually your body absorbs it or is more efficient if you spread it throughout the day. So having a protein source at breakfast, lunch, and dinner is a way to do it as well.
Mm-hmm. So how much protein should we have per day? Is there a formula based on your body weight?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the typical formula over the age of 50, sometimes, again, we like a little bit more protein, especially if we're trying to lose weight or lose belly fat or build a little more muscle. So I just say most of my patients just divide your weight in half, and that's the amount of protein you should have per day, which gives you an idea. And then we would add a little bit more based on if you want to lose weight or you have sarcopenia. Another percent is sometimes you want to bump it up. Usually it's 25%. We want to bump it to 30 to 35%. You know, of our protein per day. And choosing, again, chicken, turkey, fish.
Mm-hmm. Lean protein.
Lean sources, right. You know, chicken without the skin. You want to do the white meat chicken. You don't want this fried. You know, you can air fry it or bake it. In terms of if you want lean meat, you know, you could do like the 93% lean ground meat. You could do fillets or leaner cuts of meat as well. You don't want the higher fat and the higher saturated fat. And I know plant-based is a big part of the diet now. So they're recommending to have a plant-based source in your diet a day. So that may be having a meal with beans or having a meal with tofu or some of the different bean pastas are nice too because they give you 25 grams of protein.
Let me ask you this. So there's talk about if you're going to exercise, you need more protein. But if you're a typical older person who's doing the, you know, 75 minutes of moderate exercise a week or 150, do you really have to add that much more protein? Because the other thought I have is, what about with aging, people that start to have decrease in kidney function? Do not start plopping on that protein until you talk to your doctor.
No, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can damage your already hurting kidneys. Yes.
Kidneys, right. If you don't drink enough water. So that is true. So it's pretty much of a balance. If you want to lose weight, we definitely need to increase protein because when somebody loses weight, they're losing muscle and fat. So you want to prevent that. Otherwise, if you have, you know, gout or conditions where you have to watch high protein levels, and I still recommend not doing these no carb diets, having, you know, high fiber breads and pastas and fruits and vegetables in the diet as well. But I should get an idea. I know the real question is nobody knows what a real serving size is because people get, you know, confused, you know, less is more. Like, so the size of your hand, which, you know, everyone has a different size hand, but that could be anywhere from 25 to 30 grams of protein per day. So if you're 150 pounds and you divide that in half, that's 75, you have that one chicken breast is already a quarter of your day. So it's really not that hard to get the protein. And most Americans actually eat too much protein. If you do two eggs, you know, one egg is 7 grams of protein. You know, tofu is about 15 grams of protein. Beans are a little bit different, you know, beans, because they have a little bit of protein and carbohydrates and fiber. So they're going to be anywhere from, you know, 10 to 20 grams, depending on the amount that you're having. And again, spreading it throughout the
day.
And
beans are important because they're the magical fruit. The more you eat, the more.
Right, yeah.
That's good.
They're actually, the magic, the superfood in terms of not really fruit. I guess they're legume or bean. So it's a high protein. It's a plant-based protein. So you can't really eat enough of them unless you eat too many of them. You may have GI issues, but otherwise it's one of the healthiest, plant-based sources. But I will tell you, there's lots of patients that maybe you're 70 who don't even want to eat any of these foods. And they're like, how can I get extra protein in? So then we talk about different protein powders. So, you know, some of the drinks, the traditional drinks that are out there are a little bit higher in sugar and lower in protein, but there's different plant-based ones. The newest one we actually like, and my patients tolerate really well if they don't want to do whey protein, is the pea protein. It's made from peas, like yellow peas.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, PEA. So they take a pea, you know, and they develop this pea protein. There's so many different brands out there. You can get it in powder, you can get it in liquid, you can get it prepackaged, but that's a really nice way to add protein. And they range from anywhere from 20 to 30 grams of protein per serving.
So pea is the vegetable.
It's a vegetable, but they derive the protein from it. So it's almost like a legume.
Wow.
And it's a high quality protein, and people do really well with it if they don't want to do, you know, whey protein.
So the message is, don't go adding a lot of extra protein till you check with your doctor and make sure your kidney function is normal, because kidneys can be damaged if they're already slowing in their function. They can be damaged by too much protein. So check with your doctor. Number two, spread your protein through the day. I love that idea. The formula again, Emily, for protein.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's usually, I just make it simpler. You know, there's calculations we do as dietitians and healthcare professionals, but I usually say half your body weight, and then we would add an extra, you know, 10 to 20 or an extra 10% or 15%, depending on
your activity,
you know, if you're exercising
yeah.
or not. Yeah. So, and then again, that, you know, bumping it up. Also, if it's 25% of your calories from protein, normally I would bump it to 30 to 35. If, you know, if, again, if you have sarcopenia, if you have, you know, decreased muscle mass. Also, when people are sick, you know, and you lose weight because you've developed a virus and you're just not eating, that you can, that sarcopenia, you could lose muscle mass very quickly there as well. So therefore you really want to try to bump up protein. You can do it.
So
in
last question as well. With those weight loss drugs, Ozempic, et cetera.
Right.
If you lose weight precipitously, we have to be careful because you can become skinny fat. We have about 30 seconds. Tell us what that means.
Yes. I mean, that's another whole topic, which I know we've discussed in the past. Yes. I mean, protein's primary. You have to do protein first, then it's vegetables and fruits, and then it's carbohydrates. But yes, you will automatically, I don't know if there's something with the medication. You know, I mean, I think a lot of these patients are losing, or people are losing weight relatively quickly. Most people are losing more than that 1% body weight per week. So then that's the big culprit. A lot of them aren't eating enough calories, so they're not able to exercise. I have one patient out of all my millions of patients or hundreds of patients on it. And he's running like 5 miles a day. But most of my patients can't do that very intense exercise because they're only eating like 1,000 calories a day.
Yeah.
So that's another.
So if you lose weight precipitously, you can lose protein with it. And if you don't replace the protein, what you're retaining is fat.
Right.
So the balance is off. Life is a balance. Emily Rubin, thank you so much
thank
for joining
so much.
Us. We always learn so much from you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday at 5 p.m. here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen again to any of our shows on audacy.com. That's audacy.com. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, for their continued support. Friends, enjoy the end of summer and don't get in the ocean or a pool unless there's a lifeguard. Please remember to pray for peace in our world, peace in our beloved country, peace in our families, and in each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love, and always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.